So moving on to today's speakers, Olivier Hardy, who did his PhD at the University Libre de Bruxelles in Belgium, and did his postdoc in Montpellier and also in French Guiana with INRA, and then moved back and has been at Brussels again as a senior associate researcher at Brussels, which sounds like lots of research and not much teaching duties. So it sounds like it's comes together. But he wouldn't call that. And he focuses on many aspects of population genetics and community ecology, but also we were just talking a lot about pollination and seed dispersal in tropical biomes as well, and how it links into community structure and assembly, and with a particular focus on African tropical forests. So you're welcome, Lily.
Okay, thank you for your introduction. Yeah, so I will talk today about phylogeographic structure of tropical plants at the level of communities and population, and how, to which extent we can learn things about the process of environmental filtering, dispersal limitation, and biogeographic barrier. So what I call phylogeography, it's geography and phylogeny that you put together, and you try to extract some information from this. And actually, before I go to this, I had a slide with just quick presentation of, so my background was already say, so population genetics, but about the type of research we conduct in my lab. So some is about species delimitation. It's all on Africa, and to see how genetics can change the view we have of what are species. Then gene growth, seed, and pollen dispersal, and looking also at the impact of logging or pollinators and dispersal. Genetic structure, this is about the insights on the population history and in relation to class climate change. We'll talk about this at the end of my talk. And the phylogeny, to have to study in particular the evolution of traits or the environmental niche of species. And then plant communities, and it's especially, this will be my main aspect I will talk, the phylogenetic structure to understand species assembly rules. We have also started some work on invasive species in Africa, in Cecropia, and I also do some basic modeling, mostly simulation, to try to link process and patterns. So I come back to the phylogeographic structure. So what we hear by this, imagine that you have four communities in a landscape, and you can have four species. And could have all the communities with exactly the same composition, same abundance. We could say there is no species turnover. Or you could have different communities differing with different species and different abundance of each species. This is the three next panels. But actually, these panels differ in the way species assemble with respect to the phylogeny. So in the first case, we see that species can coexist independently of whether they are sister species or more separated species. So we say there is a species turnover, but we could say there is no phylogenetic turnover in this case. In this situation, we see that the closely related species are found together here. And even they are really segregated geographically between Central Europe and Western Europe. So we can say there is a species turnover, but in addition, we have a kind of phylogenetic turnover. Often we call this phylogenetic clustering or attraction between related species. And we could have the opposite. Here you have communities, but it's always non-sister species that are found together. So we could say there is also a phylogenetic structure, but this time in the opposite way, it's a phylogenetic overdispersion, then we talk about repulsion or evenness. So the goal is to try to understand to which extent, when we do this over many, over different scales, what we can learn about species assembly rules. Now, this is what is on communities. The next slide looks similar, but it's totally different. Now we have populations. We have one species, and the tree is not a species tree, it's a gene tree, where it's just different alleles. And actually, in population genetics, we can have basically the same approach, where we would say, hey, there is no genetic differentiation, while in all the other cases that there is genetic differentiation. We don't use exactly the same vocabulary. Usually we say no phylogeographic structure, a phylogeographic structure in that case. And this case, usually it never appears. It's a case where related alleles would be segregated. Usually it's unexpected within species, or it would be really under very particular situation under selection. But anyway, so I will first go into patterns that we can look at community level, and then make a parallel with patterns we see at the within species level amongst populations. So for the community level, well, this is work with many other colleagues and collaborators, and I will look at a range of spatial scale to which extent we have aggregation, so clustering or over dispersion of species in communities. And first, try to make understand what could be the link between a pattern and a process. So here, imagine that you look at communities not across Europe, but across elevation belts on the mountain. And you could have, so, phylogenetic clustering if related species occur on the same belt, or phylogenetic over dispersion across belt, or maybe within a belt. So what could be the process? Here we could imagine that this occurs if we have environmental filtering, so these two species are adapted to high elevation, these two species to low elevation, and so it means that we have environmental filtering, and through the phylogeny there has been a phylogenetic conservatism of the ecological niche. In the second case, where we have over dispersion, we can also imagine this could be due to environmental filtering as in the first case, but here, instead of conservatism of the niche, we have rather habitat convergence, so we have sister species diverge and occupy different niches. This, you could imagine that this could occur, for example, on oceanic island when they are first colonized by different species from inland, and then each species could maybe undergo adaptive radiation, and each one produced several daughter species adapted to different elevation belts. And this is indeed sometimes observed. It was on the island of Réunion, for example, it was observed. Now you could also have a pattern of phylogenetic over dispersion, so sister species tend to segregate, but not due to environmental filtering and habitat conversion, but rather by competitive exclusion. So here we assume that the two communities are in the same type of environment, but we could imagine that closely related species, they tend to compete more between together, so that one win over the other and exclude it. So there you could also imagine, it's a very classic hypothesis in community ecology, that you could have more competition between related species, and that could lead potentially to local exclusion. So the question is a bit, how much of these different processes are important in the evolution of communities. Now here, the mechanism I presented is all referred to habitat selection or exclusion, so ecological and evolutionary processes. But there is another way you could have a phylogeographic structure. Imagine you have a landscape with one species, then suddenly, or not so suddenly, some variance appears, so that over time there will be a speciation process, and then if you wait further, those one also speciate, and what you get at the end is also a pattern of phylogenetic clustering. So a biogeographic barrier is expected to give also phylogenetic clustering. But not always. If we invert the two processes, instead here we started with a barrier and then sympatric speciation, here we start with sympatric speciation, and then a barrier and then subsequent speciation, and actually you end up with phylogenetic overdispersion. So you could obtain a thing, but if you wait further, you have again new speciation process, and so this should be just a transient pattern that will come back to phylogenetic clustering. So in general, we expect that the biogeographic barrier will generally lead rather to phylogenetic clustering than the opposite, but it can depend on scale. Now we can also try to understand this in a more global, if we want to integrate biogeography and evolution. We imagine species that evolve, and these, so we have seven different species, and the evolution is the evolution of traits that would change the niche, the environmental niche of species. So we have in total three possible niches, X, Y, and Z. So that's the evolution. Then we have the biogeography, so we had some separation, and maybe 1 and 2 came only in region 1, 3 to 7 in another region that are separated. But we can also imagine that sometimes we have long distance dispersal between two, so we can enrich some of the diversity of some region by this. And then we look at a local community, rather the ecology of these niches. So if we are in region 2, we see we have those three niches, and for each niche we have two possible species. They will compete locally, and so that in a local community, maybe the local community can accept two types of environmental niche, but not X, so we have environmental filtering already occurring. And then maybe, okay, there could be a niche for X, so it's niche Z that is filtered out. For X, there are two species, but maybe three does not compete enough compared to three and is excluded. So we have here all these processes, and there is a loop, is that when you have competition, there could be a driver for selection that will change the evolution. So we can imagine the evolution and the integration of communities with this kind of theoretical framework. Now, a bit complicated slide, but it's not that complicated. I will try to explain the best I can. How we can measure, so I told you about phylogenetic clustering, phylogenetic overdispersion, how we can quantify this. And one way is actually to, when you have a phylogeny, you can change and consider this is a distance that could be divergence time. But if you don't have a precise phylogeny, you could even take a taxonomic level as a proxy. And actually you could even integrate functional traits instead of using phylogeny. You could consider a trait distance, functional trait distance. Well, when you have this, what you have different samples, you have community inventories, and what you can compute is the average mean phylogenetic distance within a site. So it's, you have say three species, you say what is the average of all my pairwise comparison between those species, and you do this within sites or among sites or between two particular sites. And then you make a ratio. This is, for those who are a bit familiar with population genetics, it's a bit similar to FST statistics. That's why I use this ST again below to say, okay, it's a ratio of diversity within over among. And we have a ratio between these. This measure is a measure of phylogenetic turnover. So how it works? If we have a case like this where so we have four communities. Here we see that species assemble randomly with respect to the phylogeny. The expectation is that my statistic PST equals zero, or it's not significantly different from zero. If the closely related species are together, that means we have phylogenetic clustering, then this PST is larger than zero. And if we have over dispersion, so together we have only non-sister species that come together, we have a negative value. And then we can test whether we are in this situation or in that situation against that one by random recomputing this PST, but randomizing randomly the species at the tips of a phylogeny. So we break down the true phylogenetic relationship, and we should obtain then a PST around zero, but we can test if the observed value is outside or inside the distribution. So this is a way that we can quantify and assess the direction of the phylogenetic structure. So I will now use this at different scales to see what it gives. So the first scale is very low, well, quite local scale. It's a data set from the CTFS plots. You probably know this 50 hectare plot. So there is one in Cameroon, curve plot. So it's 500 meters to 1 kilometer here. And in total, there were more than 300,000 stems of trees, more than 1 centimeter, that were inventoried, and they found about 450 tree species in there. There is a very rough habitat characterization so far, which is based just on the topography, so it's topographic class, but for each local, so local communities of 20 by 20 meters, so it's very subplots, according to the topography, there was a work done to classify this in five types, because here we have a hilly area and then a floodplain, which is quite wet. We need a phylogeny, and so we used RBCL and MATKE, so two genes often used from the chloroplast genome, which is often used for deep phylogenies. And these were sequenced for the most abundant species, not all, because it's already quite much, but at least for 270 species, we had information from 95% of the stems. And okay, so we have so many local communities. Now we can compute the statistics for each pair. But for each pair, it's nearly 1 million pairs of communities, so I will not show you 1 million points. But what we can do is to make average. And we make average according to whether two communities belong to the same type of topographic habitat or different types, and whether they are close, like adjacent, or far apart. And this is the graph. So this statistic is an average value over all pairwise comparisons, here according to the spatial distance along a logarithmic scale, so from 20 meters to about 1 kilometer, and separating the plots which belong to distinct habitat types or to the same habitat type as we see. So what we see is first that the value is above zero, and it is significantly actually above zero at all spatial scale. So it means that the general pattern is phylogenetic clustering. It means that locally you are more likely to have related species than non-related species. What we see is that the habitat types has a quite important effect. So it already suggests that ecological differentiation or the ecological conditions is what it means when you are across habitats. It means that you are more likely, when you compare very different contrasted habitats, to have more closely related species within plots than between plots. And we see also that the spatial distance has an effect. Now, the spatial distance has probably a very indirect effect. It is mostly that the further you are, the more you increase the habitat differentiation. And here we see that when we are within habitat, actually quite quickly, there is no more trend, probably because there is not so much habitat differentiation. So phylogenetic clustering is the dominant pattern at this scale. But, well, the idea about the opposite pattern, phylogenetic over dispersion, it could be due to competitive exclusion between related species. Now, maybe competitive exclusion between related species occur at even smaller scale between individuals that directly compete. So we needed to look further at a more local scale, and there we devised individual-based analysis, so for every tree. And the principle is what? We look at, so this is a map, A, B, C are different species, and we want to know whether when we take a focal species R, A, and a species B, we could say at the distance C we have so many, that proportion of species B, is it more or less than the expected proportion over the whole array? So we have a kind of measure that depends on the distance, and when we make an average over all pairs between two species, so take these two species, they have quite similar distribution, and what we see is indeed when we make a map of the whether they are co-occurring at small distance, indeed they tend to be co-occurring, at large distance is the opposite, because we compare this and this. If you compare these two, they are very different distribution, we have negative. So a graph that decays means these species tend to be together. A graph that starts from negative and up, it means two species tend to segregate. So this is a way to characterize to which extent two species are related in space. Now, we have no phylogeny here, but what we can do is to make average curve over all pairs of species that are either very closely related species or very different species in the phylogeny. And this is the resulting graph. So this is the average curve over all pairs of species that have diverged less than 2 million years ago, according to our phylogeny, very approximate. What we see is that even at, say, individual 4 meters apart, they tend to be more together, and this decays. So it means that we have, again, some special clustering between species. When we take species less than 10 million years ago, it's still the case. Even less than 50 million years ago, it's like species from the same family. And if we take species that diverge more than 100 million years ago, then we start to observe the opposite path. So indeed, there seems to be a relationship, a spatial clustering at even at very short distance. Now there is a gray zone, because if I remove it, we see a strange thing, that it drops when we are really at just 1 or 2 meters apart. That suggests that there could be some signal of repulsion between related species, but it's very at a very narrow scale that it occurs, and it's really not dominant over the landscape. Now, I repeated this also on Barro Colorado plot, and I didn't get this drop, but the rest of the pattern. So I'm not sure it is really significant anyway. So let's change of scale, and now we can look at a continental scale, and the goal is again to look at these patterns of aggregation, phylogenetic clustering or over-dispersion, but between regions. And then the first step here was to define what are biogeographic regions, coherent biogeographic regions. So this is a work that was done quite recently. It first based on assembly of so Rainbio project. It was to assemble a big database of especially herbarium material, but from many different herbaria, to get the most possible comprehensive data set for tropical Africa. And the color here simply display the number of samples, herbarium samples, per grid square. So we see that there are some areas that are poorly prospected, some other very well prospected. For also, in total, there were 24,000 species. It's not only tree, eh? It's also herbaceous and any plant species. And we needed a phylogeny for this, but we could not sequence all new species. But looking on the gene bank, we can have already a lot of species. So if we assemble RBCL and MATK for all what is on gene bank worldwide, is around 36,000 taxa species, or taxa at least, among which we have about 4,000 African plant species. And what is good is that about this represents already nearly 90% of the genera that are represented in the database. So it means it's already quite good, and so we could reconstruct a phylogeny for these species, but simply when we had not the species represented, which is the majority of case, but we had the genus, we simply graphed and say, okay, it's this species is sister to one of the other species of the genus, a bit randomly. So the phylogeny is very rough at shallow level, but it should be good at deep level. Then we need to define biogeographic region, and we use this bioregion map. What is good in this system is that it will try to aggregate local communities so that by to form regions that are that contain endemic species. And what is good is that when you have a heterogeneous sampling, is that it adjusts the cells, so it's not constant size cells. If you have area where you have a lot of sampling, it can take very small cells. If you have area with little sampling, it will take large cells. And then it has a procedure to aggregate all these compound cells so as to form something that looks like a homogeneous bioregion, more or less. Well, I don't go into the details, but at the end we could recognize 16 bioregions, where we consider that one bioregion must contain at least 5% of endemic species to be considered as a bioregion. We have also areas like here or here, which were also recognized as bioregion, but which had less than 5% of species. Actually, we consider them more as a transition area because they really mixed flora from adjacent regions. So, okay, now we have a subdivision. This is the Guinea-Congolian forest, which can be subdivided in three. We have the coastal forest of East Africa. Then we have savanna from a Sudanian savanna. We have also different types of miombo type of vegetation. Then the high plateau of Ethiopia and Kenya, and still other communities here. And then, for example, here in Angola, a very different vegetation type. So the question is now, what is the phylogenetic structure of the flora of these different bioregions? Oops. So I could do it with this PST stuff and so on, but I looked at another pattern and another way of describing this. And if you have a list of species, a list of bioregion, you can compute a measure of species turnover. But what you can also do is, with the same data, instead of looking at species, you look at lineage. And then you can take your phylogeny and you set an age threshold so many million years ago, and you say, okay, those are my different lineage. And then instead of having a species by bioregion table, you have a lineage by bioregion table, which will be, of course, simpler because you have less lineage than species. The advantage of this approach is that you use exactly the same way of measuring turnover. In one case, it's phylogenetic species, in the other case, it's lineage turnover. And moreover, you can adjust the age threshold to see how does this affect the way it works. So, I will illustrate what it gives as a reason when I compare one particular region, which is the Upper Guinean forest, so the rainforest from West Africa. And then we can compare it to different case. We can compare it to the Lower Guinean forest, so it means a forest type which is very similar in terms of ecology, which is adjacent. We can compare it to East African coastal forest, which is still a bit same type of environment, in the sense that it supports a type of rainforest, but is very disconnected. So we can contrast biogeographic barriers and environmental difference. And on the other side, we can look at Upper Guinean forest to the Guineo-Sudanian savanna. So here we have a much drier, so it's a more different landscape, but a lot of contact between the two, or a different landscape, but which is really disconnected. So we have about all possible comparisons. So these are the value of the species similarity for all my cases. So when I compare this with the different case, the first case is the Lower Guinea. So we compare here adjacent communities of the same type, but well, we have some species similarity, not that high. If we compare it to a different area, but which is ecologically distant, but which is just adjacent, we have also a lot of species similarity. If we compare it to disconnected, we have nearly no more species similarity between them. The question is now, this is species similarity, what is it about lineage similarity? And I have to see this, so this is the value of the each line represents one particular comparison. In green it is the same, it's forest against forest, while in red it is a forest against a savanna, or at least an open landscape. And so we have, it's the same value that I presented before, but here this is the species similarity, and this is the lineage similarity, and you see how it evolves. So what is interesting here is that, for example, if we consider Upper Guinea and Lower Guinea rainforest, we see that as we cut, we have quickly a lineage similarity that increased quickly. And in fact, if you consider lineage 10 million years ago, you have a high similarity. It means that even if you have many species endemic to one side or the other side, often they have a related species, a congeneric species that occur in the other side and which is as dominant in the landscape. Even more, if you compare these Upper Guinean forest with the eastern coastal forest, you start with nearly no shade species to a fairly high level of lineage similarity. So it means that actually you come back to about the same composition of deep lineage because you are in the same type of vegetation. This is not the case when you compare contrasted vegetation types, where you have an increase but which quickly saturates, so you maintain, means that, and this is quite expected, it's like comparing forest and savanna. In savanna you will have a lot of Poaceae, Cyperaceae, and so on, that you will not find much in the forest. So intuitively it makes, of course, sense. So this is a graph that compares just one community with four others. Now we can try to see the general pattern comparing all pairwise communities, and to represent this, so each point is a pair of bioregion, and I look at the floristic similarity or the lineage similarity, but cutting at 20 million years ago, and I look either is there a correlation with geographic distance or with ecological distance. And ecological distance here is based on climate data, so it's just a climate gradient. And what we see is that floristic similarity depends a lot on the spatial distance, but lineage similarity depends a lot on ecological distance, and you have a really very strong relationship between the two. This is when you cut at 20 million years ago. Now we can try to look at how much these correlation, well, this is a percentage of variation explained, so it means that linear telemetry is explained about 57% by the climate gradient. Now, if we change now the cutoff, we get this graph. This is the correlation, so it's the R square. This is just the simple correlation, it's the R value between ecological distance and the lineage turnover depending on the age. And you see that it's quite stable in against ecological distance, while the effect of spatial distance really decay quickly according to the time threshold. And actually, it drops. There remains always a correlation, but this is expected, is because when you are far away, you are more likely to be also in different climates. So it's more as an indirect correlation that occurs. We can look, so this is up to 50 million years ago. This is the graph up to the root of the phylogenetic tree, and we see actually that the good correlation for lineage turnover drops after about 120, 130 million years ago. This corresponds actually to the separation between the manyolids, the eudicots, and the monocots. So it means that much of the signal here is actually a difference, predilection of this big lineage for one or another type of environment. Okay, that was for the that was for the intracontinental case, and now let's go still further between continents, not more in Africa but around Africa, and the goal now is look at the 1 hectare plots, so it's not a bioregion, we have come to a close scale, but we look Panama and we want to compare what is happening compared to a set of plots in Western Ghats. So we are on opposite side of the Earth, and we can wonder whether there is still some link between the assembly of those communities. What is special is that so there are 50 plots of 1 hectare, it's all trees above 10 centimeters, over areas that are quite similar in size. And what is particularly interesting is that we have a strong climate gradient, a rainfall gradient, that is across Panama. If you are on the Atlantic side, it rains nearly more than 3 meters water a year, and less than or about 1,500 millimeters on the Pacific side. And we know that this affects species distribution. And the same occurs in Western Ghats. The gradient is even higher because here you have a strong effect of the monsoon with areas that are really within the cloud and then behind the mountain, which become much drier. There is here also an elevation gradient. So for 50 plots, you have a bit more than 1,000 pairs of plots, and again we can compute these statistics of phylogenetic turnover. What we see, we have a lot of scatter, but this is because it's also small plots, so should not count too much of scatter, but see the average value. The average value is positive, so it means that we have a dominance of phylogenetic turnover, so related species are found locally, and we have a strong correlation. This phylogenetic turnover is mostly explained by the difference in rainfall between plots. So we have indeed, it seems, again it reflects ecological gradient. It's the same in Panama and Western Ghats. Also it starts high here, but it's also because that you have elevation gradient that also creates, explain part of the phylogenetic turnover. Now, if we take this PST, the average value, so we can consider average value within Panama or within Western Ghats or between them, and when we are at a similar rainfall or very contrasted rainfall. So what I showed before is that, okay, we have an increase of phylogenetic turnover when we increase the difference of rainfall. But if we consider now Panama versus Western Ghats in the same type of rainfall, we have also an increase, which could be explained by a biogeographic effect, because we are on opposite side of the Earth. But what is very interesting is that if we consider Panama and Western Ghats plots that differ in terms of rainfall, we have also an increase. So it means that we have same kind of reaction, and even the increase is quite in the same proportion. It's a bit like the biogeographic effect and the environmental effect were like cumulative to explain the turnover of lineage across the regions. We can go further with this, is that we can produce, or we produced very rough phylogenies. It's the same phylogeny. What is in gray is the species here in Panama that do not occur in India, and vice versa. And actually, there is no shared species between the two data sets. But what is interesting is that within each region, we can say for each species whether it is more on one side or the other side of the rainfall gradient. So if it's blue, it's more species on the wet side. If it's green to red, it's more species on the dry side. And also, we have no shared species. We have many shared clades. So we have some shared genera, many shared families, and so on. And so we can reconstruct the ancestral climatic niche of those lineage, and then compare if it looks similar or not between Panama and India. And this is a relationship. It means this is the trade value across Western Ghats for a lineage, and this is the trade value across Panama for the same clade. So for example, Clusiaceae, a wolf family, it is only found in the wet part of Panama, Western Ghat and wet part of Panama, and on the opposite, Combertaceae is on the dry part of both sides. And you see that the correlation is also very tight. And this was, when I first saw this, I was very surprised, because these communities are on opposite side of the Earth, probably that they have not been connected since the Eocene, because there could be some transatlantic dispersal or transpacific dispersal, but it's very minimal compared to this. And still, we see that we can, because what it means is the behavior that we observe in Panama can predict where we will find the species in Western Ghats and vice versa. So it seems that pre-adaptation with respect to the rainfall gradient can persist for a very long evolutionary time, so that we still have a memory between opposite side of the Earth. Okay, so these are the conclusions for the community levels, where what we see at the local scale, phylogenetic clustering is the dominant factor. I never found really strong evidence of phylogenetic over-dispersion, except on island, but I didn't show the case. But at least I never see strong evidence of phylogenetic over-dispersion due to competitive exclusion between related species. And so I'm not convinced that this process is that important. Also, it has received a lot of attention in the community ecology literature. But of course, it's for the particular communities I'm working on. At the continental scale, we see that species that turnover is predicted by spatial distance and ecological distance, but lineage turnover is a quite good proxy of ecological distance. And so this can also be an indirect way to say, if we find lineage turnover between two communities that seem similar, probably that there is something environmentally driven that is important between these communities. And then at the intercontinental scale, we see that we have a deep phylogenetic conservatism of climate adaptations that can persist. So what happens now at within species? So I look, I want to make a kind of parallel between the two processes. Actually, it's the first time I do this type of parallel, because usually these are studies that are presented in very different audience, but I thought it was interesting here to make a parallel. So as I say, phylogeographic structure, we can study this a bit as before, but simply you are within species, and what you call species before are now alleles. And I will show different examples for three species, but only trees from Central Africa, Central and West Africa, so the so-called Guinea-Congolian forest. And just to give you a bit of information about the key areas, we recognize West African forest, often called Upper Guinea for the phytogeographic region, and Central Africa, which is divided in Lower Guinea and Congolia, because there are a number of species that are endemic to one or the other size. An important region is so-called the Omega, which is a savanna band separating these two. It has not been always there, so the period, for example, during the humid Holocene, it seems to have been forested all along here, making one whole block. And then there is also the Cameroon volcanic line, so active volcanoes, or old volcanoes, even on the Gulf of Guinea, and we will see that they are quite particular. So, first example in the genus Green Rhododendron. This is a tree from the Ananassi. It's a long-living tree species of major rainforest. So it's a typical tree of forests that have not been perturbed for quite a long time. And it's genome here. It's a chloroplast genome that we fully sequence for a bit more than 100 samples. And then with the full chloroplast genome, we can obtain a very detailed phylogeny. Nearly each node is resolved. And we recognize different clays. First, we recognize different species that separate here. So there is one species endemic to Upper Guinea, one from the point is not there, but here, from the coastal forest of East Africa. And then we have mostly sequenced one species, Suaveolens, which occurs here. And what we see is that each of the major clades occupy a particular area. So we see this even better here. If I concentrate just on this species, Suaveolens, we see, we have really kind of parapatric clade. It's not perfectly parapatric, so we have some overlap. But we could also confirm with nuclear markers that it's still the same species. I mean, even in the overlap, they're totally mixed. But what is the... Here we have so phylogenetic clustering. So locally we find mostly chloroplasts, which are closely related. And this is the dominant. So now the question is, when did they diverge? And here, before giving you the answer, I would like to have your opinion. When you see, so it's one species, different population here across Central Africa. Do you think it would be divergence more of the 1,000 years, 10,000 years, 100,000 years, million years? Do you have some guess?
Thousands
years,
yeah. Have a conversation, but I had a guess. Pleistocene ice ages, tens of thousands.
Due to ice age is a kind of common framework to think about divergence. And here's the answer. So we look here. This is million years. So most of these clades have diverged about 4 million years ago. So we are even before the Quaternary. It's the Pliocene here. And actually you have even here in this Cameroon, so here you see the highlands of the Cameroon volcanic line.
we have a special clade here. It has diverged 9 million years from the rest. So it's very ancient. And when we saw these results, we were quite surprised because it was saying, okay, all our stuff about glacial refugia, what do they mean? We are clearly not on the right time scale. And okay, maybe just a particular case. So let's look at another case. Mm-hmm. Oops, Musanga. Sorry. Musanga sacropritis. This is a totally different species, very common in Central Africa because it's short living pioneer species. So we could say, okay, that should be very dynamic. We would expect maybe more closely related relationship with glacial interglacial period. We again find very mostly parapatric lineage, but when we date them, okay, it's more recent, but still most are separate 1 to 2 million years. At least it's Pleistocene, so it could be related partly at least to glacial interglacial cycle, but at least it's much older, much, much older than the last glacial maximum. And so here again, what it means? It means that also here we have a near continuum of forest cover. They do not mix. And I don't think it has anything to some repulsion. I think it is simply because they have not the time to mix. Let's look at some other examples, and let's look if the seed dispersal distance could be very different. So these are two forest species. One we know recently that it's seeds are dispersed by wind, but we know that probably during storm winds they can be dispersed over probably several kilometers. And for that one on Tonota, we think, we don't have a proof, but we think that it's more short distance dispersal because it has not anything that should favor dispersal. These are the different, so it's not a phylogeny, it's a network. So we see the different clades again, and these different clades again, they occur quite in parapatry. And we see even that it's very similar pattern, at least here, except that in Lower Guinea, then it's not really exactly the same pattern. So when we see this, we could say, okay, it seems that these two species have maybe very similar history, because we see a similar pattern. Is it the case? Then we make a date of this, and okay, it's the same pattern, but if we look at the first divergence between Upper Guinea and the rest, in one case, Antonota, 6 million years ago, so again, very, very old. And the other case, 400,000. So we have more than an order of magnitude of difference. So similar pattern, but not the same time. So it means it cannot be really the same process that was behind. We also have a very interesting result that the Dahomey Gap was probably colonized recently because this, during the glacial time, there was probably no forest at all. But it seems that the colonization was quite ancient in this case and quite recent. That they could, given the error that we have on the date, it could be post-glacial actually, potentially. Now there was another thing that was a bit strange, is that we look at the Antonota macrophylla. So 6 million years divergent between this and that. Okay. But then I had a postdoc who make also, so that was based on this chloroplast genome, and a postdoc made a nuclear phylogeny with nearly 300 genes, so it should be robust. And they obtained very different results. It's a phylogeny. This is the Antonota macrophylla that is supposed to be represented there. These are the other Antonota, and then you have even sister genera. And what you see is that actually they have diverged only 5 million years ago. So that makes no sense with this. So is it a problem? Is it because we made big errors in our dating, or is there a biological explanation? And then we looked again at this plastid phylogeny, and we found that we made errors, but not of the kind we saw. The error was that some errors were made in the species determination. It's not all Antonota macrophylla. There were six samples which had been badly identified, but which were considered as Antonota macrophylla. We sequenced them, but after we realized that actually they belong to other species, even in one case to another genera, another genus. But the chloroplast DB is exactly at the right class where we expect them for Antonota macrophylla. So what does this mean? Is actually the chloroplast genome can be transferred very easily between all these Antonota species, but even further, they can be transferred between the sister clade and even the Berlinia clade. And what it seems is that how to explain this, the main explanation or most logical explanation is that all those species can quite easily make F1 hybrids and then back cross with one of the parents. And in that case, you can imagine that actually one species can invade a new place not by seed dispersal but by pollen dispersal. What is necessary is just that there is a congeneric species or even in a Berlinia clade species that is there, and then it back crossed several times. It has the local chloroplast genome explaining this very ancient phylogeographic structure, but it has put its new species, which is defined by the nuclear genome. And then, indeed, and then the date makes sense, because the divergence between the chloroplast is actually about the same as the divergence between all those different species that actually exchange their chloroplast between one and another. So we see that it can be quite complicated in some case. But what we have seen especially is that this is some hypothesis about the distribution of the forest through over the last glacial period, so going to about 130,000 years ago, where we would have a continuous, for example, during the Holocene or during the Aemian period, so the previous big interglacial, and then during the LGM, it would have been scattered. So much of the discussion in phylogeography has supposed that this is the main explanation for the phylogeographic structure, but we see that actually it seems not to be the right time scale, and so it suggests that in general we have a very slow population dynamics, at least for some of the forestry species as I present. So that's the conclusion at the intraspecific scale. So we have generally parapatric clades that occur, so a strong spatial phylogenetic clustering. We find a number of shared phylogeographic patterns between species, for example, differentiation between West Africa, Lower Guinea, Congolia. The colonization of the Dahomey Gap from the Cameroon volcanic line was found several times. And for many cases, we also found that the most ancient clades were occurring around this Cameroon volcanic line. So it's probably a very important area for conservation to have a kind of museum of what exists. We see that shape patterns are not necessarily simultaneous, so we have different histories, but maybe history repeats itself, so that at different times we come back to similar patterns. And then we see that divergence is often much older than the last glacial maximum, Pleistocene, or sometimes even Miocene. So if we want to compare the two levels, at communities we see that niche conservatives has been niche filtering, ecological filtering, seems to be the dominant factors. At the intraspecific scale, it's more historical contingency and biogeography, but in both cases, phylogenetic clustering is dominating over phylogenetic over dispersion. Oh, thank you.